Hello, listeners. Yamina here. Welcome to the Dr. GPCR podcast. Happy New Year. We hope you had a restful holiday season. On our end, we're excited to be back with brand new Dr. GPCR podcast episodes. Before we dive into this episode, we are excited to launch the Dr. GPCR University program with the goal of providing courses and content on all aspects of GPCR research to support our community. To kick off this new initiative, we partnered with Dr. Terry Kinnakin, who will be teaching a course entitled Applying Pharmacology to Drug Discovery starting February 8th. The course will be held every Thursday through February 29th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Spots are limited to 20 in total, and the deadline to register ends on February 1st. If you register and join us, you'll get four live Zoom sessions with 1 hour lectures and 30-minute Q&A each time, a 30-minute one-on-one meeting with Dr. Kinnakin according to his availability, access to the cohorts group in the Dr. GPCR ecosystem, where you can find Dr. Kinnakin himself and your classmates. You'll get access to the course materials and recordings. You'll get a completion certificate signed by Dr. GPCR and Dr. Kinnakin. And if you'd like to take advantage of this, we're also giving you a one-year Dr. GPCR Ecosystem Premium membership, which is a $250 saving, which gives you access to the Dr. GPCR ecosystem contents and perks, including our forums, private groups, and to all ecosystem members. And this way you can revisit the course contents at any time and take advantage of visiting the other course contents later on. To get more information and register for the course, join the ecosystem for today for free. What are you doing April 22nd and 23rd? Join us for the inaugural Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs meeting taking place in Birmingham in the UK. This event will bring together scientists from both academia and industry to exchange data, technologies, and ideas in the field of GPCRs in the context of endocrine and metabolic receptors. We have a special offer for the Dr. GPCR community. Visit our website to get more information. The key topics covered at this meeting will be the latest GPCR signaling methodologies, metabolite sensing GPCR biology, and novel endocrine mediators and GPCR activation structures. This meeting is organized and we're partnering with BioSpecifica to bring you this meeting. This meeting is also endorsed by the Society of Endocrinology. Mark your calendars again for the next season of the Dr. GPCR Symposia, and mark your calendars for our first event of the year, which is March 15th. This first symposium will cover the topic of GPCR activation and signaling. We will have talks, and we will also be accommodating posters on Zoom in breakout rooms. So stay tuned. If you'd like to give a talk at any of our events, or if you'd like to be my guest on the Dr. GPCR podcast, please email us at hello@drgpcr.com. And now let's dive into this episode. Hello, everyone. This is Yamina from Dr. GPCR. And today I'm very excited to have with me Dr. Josh Pottle from Molecular Forecaster. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name properly.
Patel.
Patel. Okay, there you go. So there you go, Josh Patel. Very good to have you. Very good to see you, Josh.
Same, Yamina.
We
Thanks.
just bumped into each other at the DOT a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think I saw you at the previous DOT as well. So it was nice to
Exactly.
catch up and here we are yet again.
Exactly. And it's a small world. So why don't you start us off with an introduction and tell us who you are and what do you do?
Sure. So I'm Josh Patel. I'm currently the CEO of Molecular Forecaster. We're a startup based in Montreal, focused in computer-aided drug design. We're a research as a service company working with small biotechs all the way up to big pharma, providing our own technology and then providing that along with our expertise as a service. So working with companies to bring really early stage programs through to various inflection points along the drug discovery pipeline.
People might be wondering, what are you doing on the Dr. GPCR podcast? So, how about you run us through your story as a scientist so that people can understand what are we
Sure.
doing here today?
There
There
is
is
a
a
connection.
connection.
There is a connection beyond just seeing each other at DOT.
Yeah.
So I studied. I'm a Montrealer originally. I studied chemistry here at McGill. I did my PhD with Nick Mortessier. While I was a PhD student, Brian Schroeckert came to visit Canadian, a fellow Canadian, came to visit McGill, and our lab was the one that hosted him. And I'll speak for myself that I thought we had a good relationship. We hit it off well, a similar sense of humor. Again, maybe from my perspective, maybe he'll disagree. I was graduating soon. He was looking for postdocs. My sister was out in the Bay Area, so there was a lot of signs pointed towards taking a chance to go visit. And it was actually when my nephew was born that I was making the trip out west, and I pinged Brian and said, "Hey, I'm going to be around," and he offered me to come for a visit. Little did I know that that was my interview. I was not prepared for that. It was a day-long activity, and anyway, yada yada yada. My nephew
No,
was born that.
please. No, you have
Oh,
to tell us, and we want to
go with the
hear.
yada yada. Okay,
Yes, let's do that.
well, it was a very long day. I mean, I started with the lab in the morning, got to meet Brian, went through the whole interview process, lunch, dinner. Everyone was wonderful. I think I got along very well with everyone in the lab, honestly, and Brian and John and the whole team there. And when we were at dinner with some of the folks from the lab, I got the call from my parents that my sister was in labor, and to make my way down to Stanford to the hospital to see them. So my day just continued, and we waited at the hospital until, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the morning, and
Of course.
eventually,
When else?
yeah, that's it. Eventually went and crashed. My nephew is now 8, so
Wow.
that's a little while ago, and they're doing well. And anyway, I got an offer from Brian to join the lab, and so December of that year, I moved out to the Bay with my partner and my dog, and spent nearly 3 years at UCSF with Brian and the team there, and learned a lot, experienced a lot, saw different research cultures, saw different. Everything culture was very different than here, and then it was time to come back to Canada, back home, for again a variety of reasons, and I was towards the middle to end of 2018.
Okay. And it's an interesting, so now people know that the connection to the GPCR field is Brian Schroeckert, who I've
Yes.
not only interviewed, but I met him at the Gordon Conference earlier in June this year. And we actually went with him, but with a larger group as well, to visit this cheese factory in Switzerland. And they ended up getting a sinus infection
Oh
because
no.
of, yes, because they actually aged the cheese. And they put the old and the new in the same room so that the spores migrate, and some of the spores ended up where they shouldn't have. This was the only time that I figured I should have worn a mask. But it was a really cool experience. And as you mentioned, Brian has this amazing sense of humor.
Yeah. Did he have a lot of factoids about cheese? I feel like he would have just random factoids about whatever you were.
so we were maybe 30 people, so I wasn't all the time in the same circle as he was, but I took a lot of pictures that he emailed me later on saying, "Yamina, where are the cheese factory pictures?" Which I did send him.
I always love I catch up with him now and again, and it's always a great conversation. He's just a
Absolutely.
wealth of information, and like you said, a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And yeah, I always
And
felt that when I was there. I probably pushed the bound. He loves to talk science. Every now and again, I probably push boundaries in wanting to know more about his family and wanting to know things outside of science.
Yeah.
But I very fond of learning from him.
He was wearing his Hawaiian shirt, obviously.
Well, it
I
goes
know.
without saying.
I
We
know.
had someone in the lab when I was there dress up as him for Halloween.
Wow. How
It was
did
a
he?
bold move, and it was
Spot
perfect.
on. He was happy about it.
I won't speak about his feelings about it, but everybody quite
Loved
enjoyed
it. Okay. So
it.
he
Was
would.
very clear
Who
who she was. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so you finish your postdoc in Brian's lab, you come back to Canada for a variety of reasons, and then what happens? Because typically when people finish a postdoc, there's this year-ish period before they finish with in their heads thinking, okay, academia, industry, what do I do? How do I do this? What was the situation in your case?
Yeah, so when I joined Brian's group, Brian, one of the first things that Brian asked was, "What do you want to do after this? Like, are you interested in going, more academic route? Are you interested in going more industry route?" And I believe my answer to him was, "I don't know. I want to keep as many doors open as possible. Like, let's just see how it goes." And I had some smaller projects, some bigger projects, some that were small projects that became big projects, and a little bit of a range of experiences. But while I was there, something happened here in Montreal where my PhD supervisor, Nick, had spun out a company, Molecular Forecaster, back in 2010. So the company existed for a while, and it was him and a co-founder who was a research associate in the lab. That research associate was moving on to other things. There's a number of reasons for that we could get into if you want. But basically, there was no one to run the company because Nick was a full-time prof. And so I had maintained contact, obviously. Students, when you finish your PhD, try to wrap up your papers before you leave. It never happens. But anyway, so I maintained contact with Nick and had the opportunity to at least figuratively take over the company, at least for the optics. Nick didn't want it to impact his research or the perception of his research or anything like that. So while I was there, that transition kind of started to happen. We didn't have like full-time activities. I was very much focused on my postdoc there at UCSF, but this was happening behind the scenes, and so my interest started to go in that direction. I ended up taking a course called Startup 101 at UCSF, offered by the Entrepreneurship Center, to learn a little bit more about what I didn't know. Those are the most dangerous things, right? Is you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
So it was a 15-week intensive course that I highly recommend to everybody. They have, I think, two different, at least at the time, they had two different programs for kind of early stage and then, other ideas. I joined a team. We were doing a telemedicine. We were developing a telemedicine app for rural Jamaicans. We had a doctor in the team who was originally from Jamaica. She was incredible. And so I just joined the team because I just wanted to learn. I wasn't looking to bring my idea, but we developed this in real time, and some of the teams actually pitch to investors at the end if they've kind of sufficiently developed their plan and their ideas. And so when I came back to Montreal, by that time I kind of knew what I was going to do, and the goal was to dive into this company and become an entrepreneur, essentially a founder. I wasn't the one who incorporated the company, but company wasn't really a company yet. It was still kind of a concept. So I took my 2 months off to kind of take a break in between. We road tripped from San Francisco back to Montreal, and took 40 days to drive north to Vancouver and then all the way across Canada, all the way to the Maritimes and back with our dog. And probably the best experience of my life was those 2 months, well, a month and a half. And then when I got here, we arrived sometime in early September, mid-September. And then October 1st, we were first day in the new office. I was by myself. I sat down with an older version of this laptop and got to work.
Wow, interesting. So Molecular Forecaster's anniversary was very recently. So it's a birthday month for you
5 years.
guys. Five
Yeah,
years.
we've managed to hang on and grow and have some ups and downs, but trending in the right direction for 5 years. Yeah, we've grown the team. We have a new office. We have new infrastructure. We have more projects, and we're looking to hire again. And yeah, things are going pretty well.
I think it's very cool. And you and I talked about this journey that we just recorded and immortalized here. And I thought it was a very interesting journey that you had, and you jumped into 2 feet into this company that was ex well, that existed on paper, but essentially you gave it life, or a renaissance in that sense. Anything that you can share? So what are the things that you learn in that entrepreneurship course that you didn't know? Is there like a top three things that you didn't know
Oh,
that you
good
learned in that
question.
course?
In that course, I mean, certainly all the tangible things, like all the things that go into, legal, marketing, finance. A lot of that was new to me. I mean, I was a Shark Tank watcher, and like that was the extent of my, business building knowledge. And Never mind how representative or not representative that environment is of building a business. I definitely learned a lot about communication and storytelling and you know, building your pitch. We never went after any investors because we had pieces of a business, and our goal at the start was really to try to see what we could do with those pieces without having to go get the investment piece. And there were, you know, pros and cons to that approach. But you still need to pitch. If anything, you're pitching just as often because you're trying to pitch directly to clients. You're trying to get them to understand what you do and what is the value that you bring, and why is it worth it to them, and what are you going to do for them, and packaging that in a much less academic way, especially as an academic spin out, it's not trivial, and it takes practice and it takes some learning. There is some theory behind it, and so that was probably the biggest takeaway from that. And I mean, I've been working in teams since I'm a teenager. You know, I did leadership training. I was in a youth group where I learned about working in teams and made some big mistakes there. You know, lost friendships over things like that, and learned the limits of that. But it was, you know, with older, you know, we weren't teens anymore at UCSF. You know, working with people that have a bit more baggage, that are a bit more opinionated, that are just in a different place in their lives. You know, working with those people that you don't know, they're not your best friends. That was also a good learning experience, and how to work with others, how to, you know, when to be a listener, when to speak up, how to listen, how to speak up, and those are things that I still work on every day. I think you continue to practice those skills all the time, right?
No, absolutely agreed. And unfortunately, in academia, you don't get to practice these things and you're not exposed to all these aspects. For example, company building, you know, you mentioned the business side of it, the marketing, the planning, the strategy, building out a strategy around. And so you're lucky in the sense that you kept the relationship going with your boss at McGill, and this ended up creating your next opportunity.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in it, opportunity is the key word. You know, whenever I give talks to, you know, about, you know, becoming kind of a student founder, and it's all about opportunity. You need to be, my dad always says, you need to be good to be lucky and lucky to be good.
I like that.
And it's about creating an environment for opportunity, but there's so many things that happen out of your control, especially if you do start a startup. You just need to hope that things go well, but also foster an environment around you where things can go well, and you maybe stack the cards, you know, in your favor, but you're never guaranteed to succeed. And in our industry, you know, you're more likely to fail. The question is, how do you fail, and what does it lead you to next? And so, yeah, that opportunity is a really key word for me.
I like that. I think opportunity, you're right. Opportunity just doesn't, you know, nobody's going to come knock on your door and be like, "Hi, there you go. You didn't do anything, but here it is." And it's a struggle, but I think it also goes back to doing the work, to talking to people, to keeping your, you know, an open mind, and then opportunities will come. And I think this is important as well. And I'm very interested in hearing more about the talks that you just mentioned, giving, you know, student founders type of advice, because to our audience, most of our audience is our PhD students and postdocs, most of it. And thinking about myself, going back when I was a PhD student or a postdoc, I had no idea that these opportunities existed, but they do. It's rare, but they do. And I think if people are disposed to think about opportunity and see opportunity in everything, there would be more student founders,
It's a fair.
which is great, right? I think it could be interesting and important also to have more student founders.
I think it's growing across, you know, certainly here in Canada, it's been growing ever since. You know, what the community was like 5 years ago in 2018 is not what it's like now. There are lots more opportunities, but also that, like I said, that environment around, you know. I talk a lot about the village that it takes to build a startup, and that village has grown as well. And so there's There's people to help you. No, they won't do it for you. But there's people to help you. There's less risk inherently because of that. And so people need to, like you said, there's an education component about knowing what's available, both for students and for professors. We would I just was part of a discussion yesterday hosted by the McGill Innovation Fund, where they brought me as a student founder and a prof who has supported the creation of a few businesses from the university, and just the different perspectives about what are priorities, what's on your mind, what are you thinking of, how does this work well together? And what it we both agreed that what it is today is not what it was before. That doesn't mean we can't do more. And I think it's growing at universities across the US. It's growing at universities in Europe. It's just a question of having the seeking it out, and then having the appetite to, and the kind of passion to go out and do it.
And the I think also the I'll spit it out in a second. It's Friday, so I'm having a hard time getting my words out, but I think the grit that it takes to seeing things through, and but I think as a bench scientist, from my experience, we go from dopamine rush to dopamine rush because most of the time nothing works. And then finally, when it works, you hang on to that thread and then you continue. And I think being an entrepreneur is pretty much the same in that sense, where it's hard, but you get to, if you like it, you get to work, you get to have fun while doing it. And then every time you reach a milestone, you can be proud of that milestone.
I've heard it said in a few different ways, and you have to fall in love with your problem and not with your solution. That's one of the things, right? You have to love the process and not the outcome. I wrote a little blog in one of the early days here, because I found one of the biggest differences was that you get that dopamine rush at the bench, or for me it was at the computer eventually, because nobody wanted me at the bench. But you get that dopamine rush, and there's still kind of a there is a very clear milestone. You write a paper, right? Or you maybe you start the next experiment, and that's kind of a stepping stone. But eventually the goal was to write the paper, eventually, right? And that was kind of the you work towards it, and then maybe it leads off into something else, or you start something fresh. But in general, like, there's a restart that kind of happens from there, right? I found that sitting down as a first-time entrepreneur, that there wasn't that end. I mean, unless you're seeking an exit quickly, there isn't really that end. And if you, even if you are seeking that exit, you're usually in the 3 to 5 year range, right? It's not necessarily that 1 year paper. It doesn't come super fast, and you don't see the progress the same way. A lot of it is indirect. It's networking, it's word of mouth, it's several conversations and back and forth. So you don't necessarily see those milestones the same way, and you have to find ways to celebrate your success, sometimes on your own, and sometimes also allow yourself to kind of look back and say, look at where we came, look at
You
how
make
far
it.
we've come.
You make a great point about, celebrating a success and celebrating the small milestones. It's very rare that it's a 1 year paper. It's typically 2, 3, 5 years. So I think on that end, the bench scientists in us in general are pretty
Yeah, maybe
used
you're more
to the
attuned to it.
exactly. And it but it's important to celebrate small successes. Something worked, something you planned for. And what the other thing that I was thinking about is what's very important is to be proactive, is to plan ahead and not to be reactive to things in general.
In
But
general.
I think anything, everything can go wrong, but if you plan for it and you have thought through the different problems and the different ways this thing can fail, and if it happens, hopefully it won't, knock on wood. It's you're prepared for it mentally.
So the only thing I would say is, I think that academics writ large, there are some that won't. This is a generalization, so let me be clear. But I think that scientific research is so, by design, it's fairly you can use the word rigorous, but it's well planned out, well designed,
Yes.
and the experiment may fail, but you've planned it out, and then you have next steps from there. I
Exactly.
think one of the pitfalls for student founders is to try to plan everything. At some point, you need to accept a certain amount of unknown, a certain amount of risk, and kick off the experiment and try and just dive
Yes.
in and be ready to pivot, be ready to change, be ready to accept that something isn't working. I guess that can be part of your plan, but you could spend forever trying to map out exactly how something is going to go for the next month, 3 months, 6 months, year, and so
Yeah.
on. And on day two, you're going to be revising your plan. It doesn't work that way.
Absolutely. No, I think yes, I think you make a great point. I didn't mean to say, plan out everything to the details, but you need to have a high
But some do
level.
that. Some do that though.
Okay. Oh,
They
really? I
want
didn't know that.
that sense of comfort. It brings them a sense of
Yeah.
stability and of comfort. And like I'm not judging on that. Everybody's different, but
Different, yeah.
that isn't inherently a roadblock to starting something up, because the only thing that is preventing you is you starting.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to that point, I think the important thing is not to get lost in this analysis paralysis situation where you're like planning and paralyzed at
That's
the
it.
same time.
That's it.
And yes, it doesn't have to be perfect. And the best and the other thing is that consistency is key. You can't say, oh, I'm gonna work 5 hours on it only, and then in a month I'm gonna do it again. It's every day, the 30, 20 minutes that makes a change, that brings that change, that gets you to where you need to be. And it's important, no matter what the project is. I mean, even with Dr. GPCR, I don't work on it every day. I don't, it's just the small things. Yes, it took some planning, some thinking to come up with the concept, to come up with the ideas, to come up with the different programs. But once we had an idea as to what we wanted to do, then we just did it. And along the way, we were like, oh, this we were missing this. Or we went through an event and we realized actually we need to change the way we do it because here are the problems we didn't think about. That being said, planning ahead as to what is the next program, evaluating what doesn't work, what didn't work, how can we make it better, that's a constant thing. And it's not a yes or no decision. It's an iterative process.
You constantly are learning from mistakes, and as long as your mistakes don't blow it all up,
Exactly.
then you're okay. And so you want to plan to the point where that's not going to happen, but then beyond that, you have to be, that's where that reactive piece comes in, is there's going to be things that come at you. Well, it's Mike Tyson, I think. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. So like it's going to happen. What you want is that it's small and negligible, and in the grand scheme of things, no, it might not be exactly how you wanted it to go, but it's not catastrophic, and you
Exactly.
can recover and make it right.
I agree. And interestingly, this all that we've been talking about in the past 10 to 15 minutes absolutely applies to building a company, but also to running your lab or preparing your experiments to
Totally.
getting through your career. I know this is a Dr. GPCR podcast, so let's just talk a little bit, as you mentioned, your connection to the GPCR field through doing your postdoc with Brian Shaked. But I just want to hear more a little bit about your work on GPCRs. And also happy to hear more about what is it, how do your days look like now as a CEO of Molecular Forecaster?
Sure. I'll start with the technical so that we can put some scientific content to this,
Yes.
which is, I think, what brought us here in the first place. So I was exposed to a bunch of different GPCR research in Brian's lab. But while I was there, I was doing more what we call ligand-based discovery. So I wasn't as hands-on on the structural work, but I was bringing that experience from my PhD. So I was contributing, through meetings and just providing some guidance in when we were having project-wide discussions and things like that. But I learned a lot about GPCR biology, let's say writ large. Maybe that's a misnomer, but we'll call it that. That I wasn't really exposed to while I was doing software development in a chemistry lab. So I was bringing that chemistry knowledge, but I didn't know much about GPCR signaling. I didn't know much about bias signaling and all these things. And opening up that world to me was incredibly beneficial to where I am now, because that's obviously of immense interest to the drug discovery community, and the biotech community at large. So, I immersed myself in that material, learned a lot about how those protein dynamics are important, and then how, you know, in terms of how I apply it now, how computers handle the understanding of those dynamics, and understanding the strengths and limitations of applying computational modeling to GPCRs as a target. It was incredibly beneficial, learning about, you know, GPCRs are inherently amenable to computational modeling. They're membrane-bound proteins, so in general, you know, you may be a little less likely to be wrong for the wrong reasons. So, like, if you have a prediction and it fails, in general, it's because it didn't bind, not because it didn't enter the cell for, you know, an intracellular target, for example, which can happen in assays. And then you're, you know, as a modeler, your mind is boggled because you're like, no, the molecule should bind the target. So it's helpful in that sense. But the orthosteric pockets are well formed. They're pretty, for our purposes, they're rigid compared to, let's say, a very dynamic enzyme. Yes, there are important motions, no doubt about that, but it's pretty well described, and there's more and more structural information out there. You know, even when I was in Brian's lab, there were more and more crystal structures, and then you know, then it became cryo-EM structures, and now we have AlphaFold, where everything is a structure. And they're not all useful, but you have good starting points. And again, how those, you know, transmembrane domains interact and form this protein structure is pretty well understood. So it's very easy starting points. Well, maybe easy is not the right word, but they're very tangible starting points. What gets confusing is then when you move into, you know, allosteric modulation and again, predicting functionality versus predicting binding,
Binding.
and understanding also as a modeler that experimentally those are not the same thing. Whereas someone who has never been exposed to that may not know that difference. And they're like, no, the molecule's there. Why isn't it doing what you want it to do? Well, that's not always the case. And then you further get that into bias. And it just becomes a lot of fun. I mean, obviously you hope to succeed, but it's an interesting challenge. And I, again, falling in love with the problem and falling in love with the process, like, to me, it's a really fun challenge to tackle whenever we're now at Molecular Forecast or even in Brian's group working on a different target. There's always this nuance, and it's a lot of fun because the nuance still fits within some parameters that you feel you have some control over.
And then the GPCR does something else, or your protein does something else, and you're like, what were you thinking as a
Well, I mean,
protein?
at the DOT session, I mean, it just looking at the challenges that people face with these targets about, you know, whether receptors internalize or whether they dimerize or and those effects and how it causes a change in signaling pattern. Like, it's we as modelers tend to reduce our world so much to, you know, an amine interacting with an aspartate, and we don't always have that big picture view. And I learned a lot. My learning started on that in Brian's lab, and I'm still learning. I mean, we were at DOT just a couple of months ago, and like, there's still new knowledge coming to me. Granted, I don't have the same time to invest as I used to in reading up on these things, but it's invigorating. I love that.
It is, it is. And it also gives, I think, based on what you just mentioned, it gave you the opportunity not only working as a molecular forecaster, but also in Brian's lab, is to interact with people who complement your skills, where you come up with a molecule like, well, it's supposed to bind, and then you have the biologist at the bench who says, well, yes, but here is the data. And I think that also gives you perspective, and there's also that
Hugely.
challenge, but also the positive in that challenge is to learn to speak the same language.
A really important one, especially as a modeler. It's something that we stress a lot now in our day-to-day is speaking the same language. Like, I'm a chemist by training, and that was something that I felt I brought as value to Brian's lab. Brian's a chemist also, and John is a chemist, but then most of the lab, I don't think anybody else when I was there was like kind of formally trained in chemistry, and it's the same comments, right? Is this ligand should bind? And you're like, well, no, that ligand is actually like this bond is not physically possible. And like, software has contorted this to make it fit, but that's not realistic. And being able to explain that to someone who's more biology focused or more, computational sciences is huge. We talk a lot about being bilingual, trilingual, and being able to explain what you do to somebody else. And it's one of the biggest value adds that we bring in partnering with a biotech, because in general, we're working with groups that don't have the computational expertise. They're chemists or they're biochemists, and we have to explain what we do in their language. And it's a huge asset to understand their challenges, understand the domain in which they're living in, because then we can convey, well, here's our challenges as a result. Like, here's how this translates in what we do. And we've got great feedback that makes for very fruitful conversation and easy conversation, which we know from examples can be very difficult. People just talking past each other when they don't understand their challenges.
And sometimes people saying the same thing but in different languages. And then, you have this tension and you're like, yeah, but this is exactly what I've been telling you, but in my own way, from a biologist perspective, and the other one from a dry lab, from a, a model or.
And it can be too late by the time you figure it out.
Yes, because by then, time has passed or the relationship is already soured out because, so I think it's a challenge, but it's always important to goes back to opportunity, goes back to making yourself available. To going out there, to talking to people, you never know. And also consistency. I think it goes also back to, you mentioned that in the beginning, and I think this is the second time I'm mentioning it, that you are where you are today because you kept in touch with your PhD mentor. And you never know when an opportunity comes. And if you keep in touch with people, you may be able to help them, they may be able to help you. And it's not something that happens overnight either.
Yeah, you learn in running a business that timing is a huge element that you have to play around with, and you generally don't control. Again, you can foster some circumstances and a situation that you hope will evolve, but timing is everything. There are companies that would start today. Like, if you tried to start Facebook today, like, it would not be the same. So context is everything, and we started our business at a time that, I mean, frankly, the business itself was started in 2010, and it was a horrible time. Montreal had a very vibrant pharma R&D community that all left, during a recession, 2007 to 2012, 2013. Like, everybody moved out. Merck Frost, BI, AstraZeneca, eventually Vertex, they all left, and we were left with this kind of burned down forest. That started to, when a forest burns down, you have these biomes that emerge, and that's what happened. There's Montreal is very well known for its chemistry expertise here, and you had these spin-outs that started to emerge. These service providers, some of which existed, some of which started then. You had biotechs that started then and have continued to grow. And starting our company in 2010, like, maybe we would have had some success, but people were on the way out. It was a downward trend. And so, frankly, maybe if we would have started really ramping up, we may have plummeted pretty far. But we were able to kind of, just exist under the surface for a little while. And then, 2018, there was someone available to kind of dive in full time. The market around was starting to reemerge. There was a big focus on the more involvement in computers, even though, those of us in the field know that this was back to Brian's supervisor. Not to say that Brian's old, but that's a long time ago. This is like a 40 years old field. It's not novel. And so starting in 2018 was the right time for us. And if we would have started in 2022, I don't know, maybe it'd be better, but it would be different is the point.
No, agreed. And it goes same thing for Dr. GPCR. I mean, I recorded the first podcast in February of 2020, not knowing that the pandemic is looming around, and a month later we were in lockdown. So it turned out to be the a good thing at the at a good at the right time.
Yeah, I talk I'm especially around then, I was asked a lot about how the pandemic affected our startup growth, and The one thing that I found in retrospect was the pandemic really slowed everybody else down. It didn't necessarily help us directly. I mean, I don't think that we should say the pandemic really helped anyone, but as a business, it brought everybody else to a much slower pace. And because we weren't seeking that investment, because we didn't have that kind of accelerant to our growth, we were able to catch up and learn on the fly as a result. But like you said, we didn't plan for that. My son was born during the pandemic and was not planned as he wasn't a pandemic baby. It was, it was before. He was due in May, and
It is what it, exactly. And Dr. GPCR was not also born because of the pandemic. It just happened right before, and I never thought that, we'd
So
be
again,
with.
imagine you have that like 1 year plan, starting in February, and then you turn around, what was it, March 10th, and everything is shut down.
Exactly. So no, exactly. And we, it goes back to just go. You have an idea, try and think about, okay, where do you see yourself in 5 years, whatever the next 5, 10 steps ahead of you, but you don't have to go into details. Just go. The details, yes, I'm not saying that you never have to go into details, but if that's the barrier for starting, just go.
Agree. So I think you asked about like what is kind of my day-to-day now as a CEO, right? So it's evolved over 5 years. In 2018 it was just myself and Nick, and Nick was a full-time prof. So our offices weren't by McGill. So it was pretty lonely. I was doing a lot of the research then. We were, working with a couple of projects, but wasn't much. And I was pretty hands-on in the work, and slowly we started to grow, and my role evolved to be, less contributor, more manager, and then from more manager to more leader. And now it's more strategy. It's more, I still like to be involved in the brainstorm and in the scientific discussions. Like I said, I enjoy them. I happen to think I'm pretty good at that ideation stage of innovation. But I'm not doing much of the implementation. We have a team now of our team as a whole is eight. And everybody else is a scientist, so working on projects. So I'm leading that team. They're the brains that are doing a lot of the work. They're smarter than I am. They're better at it than I am, and I'm better at other things. My day-to-day is a lot of relationship building, is more of that business development side, is strategizing, like you said, thinking 5 years down the road, where are we headed, and trying to create the environment where we can reach those goals. And then there's a bunch of other things that I still do because we don't have those roles filled. As the CEO, you wear whatever hat you have to wear.
You're the janitor and the boss.
You do everything. And so anything that we have gaps on, we have a great team that wants to contribute beyond science. We've built a great culture of collaboration here. Our team is on site, which is a really nice benefit. I'm very supportive of remote work, and we don't force the team to be here every day, every week. But everybody here has agreed that being together provides a benefit, and being able to tap each other on the shoulder and tell each other stories about each other on a more consistent basis is super helpful. When we were all remote for the pandemic, that was one thing, and we could try to work in different features to make sure that we were building that team environment. But I've found it very difficult when we're hybrid. When some people are together and some people are apart, it's really hard to bring those people that are remote in. And so we've had people immigrate. We've had people come here to be part of the team. I think I'm the only Canadian, at least by birth. There are other people that have, Nick got his citizenship. He's a Canadian citizen. Other people are want to remain here, but we're a team of immigrants, and everybody's bringing different perspectives, different experiences, and why would you not want to put that in a melting pot, right? And have it together. We have such
Exactly.
great discussions, lessons, activities, these potlucks that people are bringing foods from all kinds of different cultures. It's like, it's just so much fun. It makes it so much more fun. You don't want your work to be something you hate with, day to
No.
day. We try to create an environment that's fun. We have, some couches and kitchen. People live their lives day to day, and they bring their whole selves to work.
Yeah.
And so that's my role now, is to really foster that, think of that, and make sure that it continues, that it's not top down, that it
Yeah.
becomes bottom up.
No, I think, I have nothing else to add. I think it's really cool, and you're right. And again, I'm gonna add some stuff to that, but you're right. Being in person is great because you get to see the person. You just don't you see above the shoulder, you see the entire person. You can read their body language. You can have, the water cooler conversation. You get to learn more about them. I think operationally running a business on Zoom works, but you never get to build that company culture. You don't get people to form those relationships.
It's certainly challenging. I feel like some people have kind of figured out at least ways to improve it. Maybe it's not the same, but ways to
Yeah.
improve it. But it's yeah, you're right. It's just not the same. And the communication piece you mentioned about seeing body language and about it was the biggest challenge, was just to have clear conversations. You're able to, just clarify something very quickly. Whereas if you're at home, like maybe you don't do that, you don't reach out because you don't want to just
Yeah.
randomly, call someone on
Call.
Zoom or Teams or whatever it is, right?
Exactly.
And people will be like, "Oh, I'm not ready to have a conversation here." Like, you see when the person is sitting at their desk and they're ready to talk
Yeah.
to you. It's
Yeah.
quite simple. So we were very intentional about team building from the beginning, and about setting, building that team culture from the small team that we had at the beginning, and then now growing it out. And we're big on those cultural values. We stick to them, and I think people are very happy to be here. I'm happy to be here, and I think it's attractive for students. You see that it's not the like 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
Come here, and you come when you're sick. Like, that's one thing that Brian taught me, was stay home when you're sick. Like, I don't want to see you, because you being out for 2 days is much more beneficial to my group than you getting everybody else sick, and then everybody is out for a day or two.
Yeah.
So just don't
Yeah.
come, and try to be very easygoing about, you have appointments. Yeah, again, people have lives. Work is not their life.
Yeah.
It's part
Yeah.
of it, and
Yeah.
we try to, make it part of a bigger mission to contribute to society and provide a value with our knowledge and expertise.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, you're more than just that. And so you have to consider that.
Not agreed, agreed. I wanted to ask more about, the approach that you took to build out this culture. Where did that come from? Did you take a course? Did you build it with a team? Because obviously these things are not taught. These things you experience. And then typically you have a bad experience, not that, you can share whatever you want, and then the bad experience teaches you what not to do. So what was your, how did you get to establishing this culture that you have?
Great question that no one has, honestly, I don't think, ever asked me. Like I said, as a teen, I was in a youth group, and had leadership training there. It was kind of like, had kind of student government type of
Yeah, yeah,
situation,
yeah,
and
yeah.
planning events, and I had a mission and things like that. But definitely, like I said, I ruined a relationship, a friendship that I had, because I pushed somebody so far. My level of commitment had to be their level of commitment, and it wasn't, and that created a lot of friction. And like I said, we were best friends going into this, and we were basically not friends at all, and didn't talk for a long time after that. We've since reconnected in other ways, because we have kids of similar age, and we live in similar areas, and we've crossed
Yeah.
each other totally haphazardly, which is
Yeah.
funny. But it took a hit, and it was a big lesson learning for me. Maybe not in the moment, but certainly reflecting back. As we built the team and built the company, I think it was a couple of pieces that came into it. One, our goal from the get-go was not to exit. Our goal from the get-go was to build a stable company. I'm not sure that we had the ambition to call it an anchor company, which is what here in Canada we're referring to as, you need to build these companies that are there for the long haul and that stay and that they train people, and those people go out and start smaller businesses. And like Canada has some candidates for that in life sciences, but there's not really, it's not the same, let's say, as the US writ large, Boston, San Diego, right? We don't have that community. But we had the vision to be there for the long haul and not, I don't want to downplay what people do, but turn a quick buck. That wasn't the goal. The goal wasn't to exit in 3 years. And I can understand that if that is your goal, then maybe team development is not really at the top of your mind because you need people in and everybody is aligned on the goal, and then they're going to be out to go find a new goal. And again, I make no judgment on that, but that wasn't my passion. And so in knowing that we wanted it for the long haul, we wanted people that were aligned with that mission, that were here to grow with the company and stay. It's a big investment to onboard people, and when people leave, like it's really hard, especially when you're small, right? People
Yes, it
have
leaves
pieces
a
of information. You don't have those redundancies the same way that like big companies have, and they can leave a big gap, right? So I knew I didn't want that. So that objective, coupled with my knowledge of an experience to your that's probably more important, of building teams and working together, putting those two things together, we knew we wanted to do it. And then I'll give a shameless plug to my sister, who is a bit older than me, that was in the same youth group that I was. I kind of followed in her footsteps along the way, but she didn't do a scientific career. She moved into kind of leadership training, and she worked with teenagers
Ah,
for a long time as a
cool.
in that youth group, but as an advisor, as a trainer, and has done a lot in coaching and in team building, and knows a lot. And around that time, we're kind of come back to timing. She had kind of left what she was doing and started her own kind of consulting. And so, as dangerous as it might have seemed to work with my sibling, I was like, "Would you come do, some team building with us?" And it started out with a team building event. She did this virtually because she's still out in California, and she did this exercise with us, and everybody loved it, and everybody loved her. And we were just thinking about ways that she can get involved, and I talk with her all the time about these things. And so she was like, "Why don't we work on building your mission statement, your company values together?" It was kind of organic in how it came up, and she was the third party that was able to interview members of the team and gather information. And then she was like, "Hey, you're not going to believe this, but like pretty much everybody is already saying the same thing, that like this is what is important to you. This is what is not to me, but to the team. This is what we try to do. This is the way that we do it. And everybody is pretty aligned, so this is going to be pretty easy." And it's already kind of organically happened. But she helped us formalize it, put it in words. It's up on our wall here in the office now. It's become a big part of onboarding new people. And again, like I said, that can't be a top-down thing. You can't tell people what the culture is. The culture is what it is, and that's grown from the ground up. So anyway, that was a really long ramble
But I
of
like
and
it.
maybe regret your question, but that's how it came to be. I think looking back, and it was hugely important.
It is, it is. And in a sense, you were lucky, you are lucky that it organically formed. And when you have a group of people that share values, then anyone new will at the interview, people are going to be able to pick up on, oh, is this person a good fit or not a good fit. But also, if the person is a good fit, then organically that person is going to integrate in the larger group. But having someone from the outside witness this and help put these things into context and tell everybody, hey, all of you guys are telling me the same thing. I think it's very important for the entire team to kind of better appreciate this, or to, I don't know, it's shining a light.
It's also objective. Like even if it wasn't the same, it's just an objective view, and it's somebody that can give you know, a non-tunnel vision view of you know what you're doing.
Exactly. The fact that the values were shared, it's a top, like it's the cherry on top of the cake. It's perfect because then you barely, quote unquote, you always have to obviously work on it, but
Yes.
you start with a good foundation.
And that's a great way to put it. Because we do constantly work at this. There are times where in projects we point to it because your values are supposed to be there for when you need a hard decision. You know, you got to make a hard decision, right? It like you said, it is organically part of who you are, but then there's those moments where you question, okay, what are we supposed to do here? And you're supposed to be able to point to that and say, this is what we should do. And it should be pretty clear. And so we've done that a couple of times. But we're very and we have like, you know, some training opportunities where we kind of, you know, we'll reinforce or expand or talk about, you know, related things. The biggest thing that hit home for me recently was at our 5-year anniversary of, we had a little, you know, little party here in our office. It's also been just about a year since we've been in our office, so it was kind of an office warming because we had a bunch of work to do. Anyway, long story. Someone came up to me, and it was the first time that they had been here, and they saw the values written on the wall. And we had been working with them for a little bit, and she said to me, "You know, I'm reading it here, and I could have told you that this is who you are, and this is who your team is, and this is what you adhere to, and like, it's amazing that like it's here in writing, and this is what we live." And there's no greater, you know, you want to talk about like
Compliment.
those small wins and those small victories, and looking at them like that's it's a quick interaction, you know, a 2-minute conversation, but that's like we're doing something right, things are going well, and you need to savor that. And I think about it often since then, that's such a great sign of success for me. It's really important to me.
No, agreed. Agreed. All right. Last top three questions, or last three questions. Top
Yeah.
three aha moments that defined your trajectory.
Top three aha moments.
And
Scientifically or
doesn't matter. It can be scientific. Anything that got that you think changed your trajectory and got you to where you are today.
I don't know, probably
It doesn't have to be three. I think one that came through this conversation is really keeping your connection
yeah, no.
with Nick.
Yeah,
I
well,
think.
never burn bridges. I mean, in general, if you want to generalize it out, but yes, connections have been a huge thing for me, and have pointed to my success. Probably like there's probably some, again, I'll speak in generalities, but probably sometime not taking myself too seriously has endeared myself to somebody. I hope, maybe to Brian, and getting myself an opportunity to go there. But certainly that's just my attitude, is again, like your life is so much beyond work. And I guess the other aha moment, like as it relates to my work, the one thing that I keep coming back to is having a child. And I know that that's not for everybody, and not everybody can or wants to, and I get that. And again, there's no judgment on that, but I was fortunate to change my life view because of that. And you know, as students, you often heard about like profs that like they became soft when they had kids, right? Like they were like, you know, you work all the time and you're supposed to be in the lab 7 hours a week, and then they had a kid, and then like, you know,
Everything
it
changed.
changed. For me, I think I was already big on work-life balance, and that wasn't what changed for me. It was m more the way that you interact with somebody. Like, not to say that the people that we work with are children, but basic human instinct like doesn't change drastically. There are some commonalities, and just learning how to think through a problem that my now toddlers is facing, like it's serious to him. It may not be serious to me, but like for him, it's very important that like these two Lego pieces don't go together. And so how can you, listen and empathize and maybe translate into solutions. Maybe they don't want a solution. And getting better at being an active listener, that like just talking with a child, it doesn't even have to be your child. But really listening to what they're trying to tell you was hugely beneficial as a scientist, as an entrepreneur, as a CEO, as a leader. And so I'll go with that as my answer.
And as a human as well, and I totally agree with you. I mean, I also have two younger children, and especially with the youngest who throws a fit for anything. The two Lego pieces not going together, that's totally it. And in my mind, I'm like, so what? But then again, as you mentioned, I think we all have our problems no matter what our age is, and then we have to be considerate of others. And instead of getting mad at the person who's honking behind you or not going fast enough or whatever, I sometimes think about, okay, what is going on in that person's life? Maybe they just got fired, or just they got the bad news, or they're sick. You never know. You never know. So keeping that in mind, as the fact that we're all human, and you don't know what the other person is living through while you're talking to them.
It.
All right, two more. I know we're almost at the top of our hour. Any additional advice to junior scientists who would like to, well, the question says contribute to the field, but I'll switch it. Who would like to become entrepreneurs?
Like we said, dive in. It's good to go out and get advice, talk to like-minded individuals, talk to some other recent founders that are maybe in a similar context, and then remember that no one will have walked the exact same path that you were trying to walk. So
Yes.
take that advice in, take in those opinions, keep the ones that try to frame their opinion in your context, keep those closer. But then you're the only one who's going to own your decision. And you're the only one who's going to benefit or suffer because of your decision. So you better be comfortable with what you decide to do. And then like, take a chance. It can be scary, and it but there's a support net available to you. It's up to you to go get it.
And it at the yeah there's this picture where it says, your comfort zone and the magic happens right out of there. So I think it goes to that. Just get out of your comfort zone. Last question. If and when you have job ads or job openings in your team, where can people find you?
So I'll say two things. One, you can find me on LinkedIn. I still call it Twitter.
I call it to
I still call it Twitter. Don't quote
Twitter.
me. But LinkedIn, Twitter, our website. I have a Blue Sky account, but I don't use it too much. And there's a couple of other like organizations that will allow job ads, Dr. GPCR being one of them. There's also Canadian organizations that will post job ads and things like that. So that's where you would find them. I will say that I'm a big proponent for the distinction between recruiting versus hiring. I think it's important to build relationships before, from my position, before hiring someone that I really don't know. We're in a position where, because we grow a little bit more slowly, we can foster those relationships over time. So I would say, if you're interested in what we do, if you think you could imagine yourself in Montreal, because for now we're focusing on keeping people on site, reach out, introduce yourself, again through any one of those platforms or through a mutual contact. Let me get to know you. Let's have coffee. Let's chat. And as those opportunities arise, before I send out an ad, I'm going to reach out to you to say, "Hey, we're looking to fill this role. Is the timing right for us to have a deeper conversation?" So I've got a small repertoire of people that I've followed, and students that are at different stages of their academic career, or even people that have started jobs, and I keep in touch with them. And you never know when the timing is right, and at least once you've built that relationship, you've overcome that hurdle. I think it's beneficial to the employer and to
Yes.
the employee to do that.
Absolutely. Josh, with this, thank you so much. Don't go anywhere. I'm gonna let people wonder what we're talking about after we stop recording, but I really, really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Amina. Thanks for chatting.
Thank you. Can I ask you a favor? Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Many of you come back and watch our videos but aren't subscribed. Having more subscribers will help us get you more content. Also, mark your calendars and join us for the inaugural Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs meeting taking place April 22nd to 23rd this year in Birmingham in the UK. Thank you for joining us and listening to this Dr. GPCR podcast episode. We would like to thank our guests, our Dr. GPCR team members, Attila, Ines, Monserrat, Ivana, Andreina, and Valint. If you like our podcast, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can also leave us a testimonial at drgpcr.com/testimonials and subscribe to our monthly newsletter directly in the ecosystem. Another way to support us is to share your favorite Dr. GPCR program with your network and colleagues. Don't forget, we're also starting up the Dr. GPCR University. So if you'd like to join us for Dr. Karen Atkins' class, or you'd like to teach a class, please don't forget to reach out to us at hello@drgpcr.com. Until next time, stay safe.